Welcome to the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil. I'm Brent Smith, alongside Shane Stetsny. And man, oh man, we are excited to get ready for Bark River. But first, we've got to talk about Lena, Shane. What a race it was. The weekend was crazy. There was a bunch of crashes. And man, just to survive was one thing.
Yeah, you know, we came into the weekend before Dirt City talking about how points battles were going to come into focus. And then to some extent, they did. Other ones got a whole lot murkier because by and large, everybody had a really tough time at Lena. We forget, I think, every year just how tight that track really is. And it's like we get there on, you know, practice day and we're watching and we're like, oh, yeah, this track's super narrow. You know, when we walk near parts of the track, we're like, oh, yeah, there's no room here for, I mean, mod carts, side-by-sides, there's room for those guys. Anything bigger than that, it's a struggle out there.
Yeah, it really is. And we could say take the gloves off, do what you got to do to get by, but there is literally only so much room, and that's what's going to happen, right? I mean, you don't bring your show body to Lena, I promise you that.
Right, and we were talking before we hit record about all the people that had a tough time. A lot of it, especially on the pro side of things, due to the dust, but again, Lena being Lena, Dirt City just has that quality about it. Tends to tear up equipment a little bit. And again, it's something that I think you and I forget about every year until we get there and we're like, oh yeah, this is a brutal track, even though it's not as big or fast as the other ones. Jimmy Henderson, no doubt, Trad had a whole bunch of work to do after Jimmy had a run-in with the fence on Sunday. You know, that was kind of the big crash in that race. Pro 4, I think, top to bottom, there weren't many trucks that weren't damaged. You know, Adrian was on the podium after round 10. I saw where he had parked and there was, you know, a puddle of fluid where his truck had parked. Like all of the fluid from the transfer case had puked out where he parked by the podium. And that's a guy that finished on the podium.
Yeah, and it was whoever could just last through that race. And that's what happens sometimes. And, you know, sometimes guys are a couple laps down and they still can get on the podium. It's just, you have to stay in to the end. And it's hard with Pro 4 with all those turning parts and then you put guys banging doors and bumping into each other. And just like that, you can lose the front differential. So, you know, that's what Lena brings. And we always said it was more of a sportsman racetrack. But, you know, you put those big dogs out there, they're going to eat.
Well, I talked about some of the points battles becoming a little bit more clear and some not so much. The Pro 4 championship battle is still super, super good. It's once again CJ leading the points by 7 over Jimmy Henderson. Those two have, you know, going back to ERX, the previous round, 7 and 8, I think that lead has changed hands 4 times over 4 rounds. That's how tight it is between those two. And by the way, Mickey Thomas is still part of that fight. He didn't win either day at Dirt City. He had won at 3 straight tracks that we went to. But he's only 23 back of CJ, and Mickey keeps racking up those qualifying bonus points, too, that are keeping him in the fight. I think we're going to see a bounce back from Mickey Thomas. And you saw him testing at Bark River, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He looked to be really, really fast. They got a bunch of laps in there, and you know he's going to bounce back, Shane. He's just showing a lot of strength. That new truck is just a rocket, and he's going to be one to watch the rest of the season. And I watch him at Bark River, like I said, in practice, and he looks so smooth, and it's hard to tell in practice, but anytime he's behind the wheel, he gives it 120%. And if that truck stays together, which it has, he's been very, very confident to win them all.
Yeah, I think he's going to play a role. It's going to be fun having Cole Maymer back in the fray in that group as well. You go back to Bark River last year, 2025, Jimmy Henderson, CJ Greaves split those two races. But again, those two aren't going to get away with it easy by any means. You know, Adrian Chenny's last win was at Bark River. It's going to be up for grabs. And, you know, being that it's the 50th too, I think everybody's going to push a little bit harder just, you know, because that weekend does mean something, especially to the guys who've been around a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what it's all about. And you know they're going to just give that extra every time they can. And you know that big wide open track at Bark River, you know it's not going to be any different, you know, at the end of the day. I mean, when they're battling, it doesn't matter short track, big track. There's areas at Bark River where it's a one-line track, so you might have to move your competitor out of the way, and you might see that. But at Bark River, 90% of the time, if you get out front, you have a great day.
Well, a few other drivers who didn't have a great day at Dirt City, our friend Leland Tice, who was on the podcast earlier this year, big crash, had a big run-in with a tractor tire, got lost in some dust, which happened to a few other drivers too. He wasn't the only one. A lot of work to be done for Leland Tice and that team. They're trying to get it back together in time for Bark River, but I know that it's all hands on deck trying to do what they can to make it back. But if there's anybody that can come back from that kind of adversity, Leland and that team has already proven that they can do it.
Yeah, they've had so many ups and downs in his career so far, so they're very confident to get it back together and glad to see that he's all right. But, man, it's torture when you build a brand new car and then destroy it and then have to get it back to where it was. And as he was building his program, you know, now he took some steps back. So I just hope he can get it all gathered up for Bark River because it's coming quick.
Yeah, and we were trying to come up with the list of everybody that ended up, you know, upside down or in trouble at Dirt City, and we ran out of time to come up with the list. But Gavin Plummer ended up upside down. So did Jacob Wiedmeyer, a couple drivers in Pro Spec. Stanley Piott in his debut in stock truck goes out, rolls over. It was just that kind of a weekend. It's unfortunate, but again, that's kind of off-road racing sometimes too.
Yeah, and that's what happens. And when the conditions were the way they were, it's going to happen. And I was imagining being in behind the wheel when we were broadcasting the race. And I mean, you could barely see where we were at, let alone sitting right close to the ground. So just like I said, glad everybody's okay and they're going to have to rebuild. It's not easy, but they're in it for the long haul.
So the adversity that a lot of drivers faced did allow for the quote-unquote little guys to score a couple. Our friend Marcus Catlin, first career podium in Pro Light. He was absolutely stoked about that. And then the rookie, Andrew Pate in Pro 4, made it on the podium. And he was probably the most excited person I've ever seen on a podium. So it's cool that, you know, a couple of the newcomers or the privateer teams, you know, sometimes when everything unravels, that's the opportunity for the smaller teams to just survive and have a hallmark moment for their team, right?
Yeah, and it was a great feeling, right? Just calling that race and watching that excitement and the gratification on the podium. And, you know, I feel what they were feeling. It's such a great feeling just to accomplish that, especially in the Pro 4 division or whatever class you're in, to get that monkey off your back. You get that confidence back in a great way.
Well, another points battle that we're going to be talking about right down to the end of things at Glen Helen, the end of the year, Pro Spec. We've been keeping our eye on it all year, and for good reason. Chris Vanden Elsen steals the points lead back from Nick Visser at Dirt City. It's only a 9-point margin. Avery Hemmer is the only other driver within 50 points of the points lead. She's 31 points out of first, but she did just win another race in round 9 at Dirt City. And then round 10, Wyatt Miller was on the podium. That was the first time Wyatt was on the podium since round 3, by the way. Wyatt is 74 points out of the lead, 5 rounds left for the pros. Are his title defense hopes kind of on life support at this point? Where do you think he stands?
I mean, it's going to be a strong hill to climb. It's going to be tough. I mean, he's going to have to win some races from here on out and hope that some guys have some bad luck, which you never want to do that in your racing career. But, you know, he needs some luck on his side to turn things around.
Another, I guess, a headline, maybe some adversity for another person, another driver that we would consider our friend. The win streak is over for William Holcher. 9 in a row is where it stops. Wasn't able to make it to double digits. Miles Pakenham comes out for the first time in the 570s this season for Dirt City. Was very fast on Saturday in round 9, and then round 10 able to get out front of William and outrun him to the finish line. William still has a 50-point lead in the 570s, by the way, and looks to, you know, we can't say he's got it in hand, but he just has to keep up the pace and he'll lock up a title in that one. But he's not invincible. It's proven. Other people can win in the 570s. And I think William took it really well, too, when he came up and talked to us.
Yeah, he really did. He took it like a professional. He wasn't all bummed about it, right? It took a little wind out of his sail. But at the same time, right, he's young. He's eager to win, and he's hungry to win, and he's going to bounce back. He'll get some more wins this year, and that championship should come to him. I mean, it's laying out well. I mean, anytime you can win 9 races in a season, you're looking pretty well.
Well, when you get to drop your 2 worst point scoring rounds, and one of your drop rounds is a second place, and one of your other drop rounds so far this year is a win. Yeah, I mean, champagne problems, right?
Yeah, that's why we're all in it, right? It's so fun to see, and where William started to where he's at now, I mean, he's going to be one to watch through his career, and just like a lot of other drivers, they're very confident to win, and once they taste that win, they start adding those up, and they want to go for records, like William would say.
a couple drivers also notched their first Champ Off-Road wins, which is also very exciting. You know, us as storytellers, we love to be able to be there and be part of the moment when a driver takes their first win. Colin Greenfield, who we had singled out as next in line to win a race in Pro-Am Turbo, finally able to get the job done. And then, man, we're probably just about as heartbroken as Eric Hill is. He was that close, half a lap away from his first win in Sportsman Side-by-Side. You know, Isaac Otto trying to make a pass for the lead. Eric and Isaac got into it a little bit. Isaac rolled right in front of Eric. And Miyakoto, who was in fill-in duty, by the way, not even supposed to be racing that class, but filled in for Stefano Caligiuri, sneaks by and takes her first Champ Off-Road win instead. You know, them's the breaks, they would say. Eric Hill was that close. We're going to keep rooting for him as much as we can, trying to be impartial, but we want our friend to pick up a win. But how about a first career Champ Off-Road win for Miyakoto?
Hey, that's awesome, right? She's in the right place at the right time, showing that speed all day long. And, you know, you hope that you get a little gift once in a while, and she did. And to get her first win, it'd be great to see her back.
Yeah, and her ARD Racing teammate, Kevin Hall, by the way, also a winner in Pro-Am Turbo. Can we talk for a moment about how much Kevin shook Nolan during his victory interview? I know in the moment you and I were both, you know, busting a gut laughing at that. I thought Kevin was going to take him to the ground. He was pretty excited.
Oh, yeah. His excitement's so much fun to watch, and to have that passion behind him, it's so great. And when he does good, he's excited. And now that he got that win out of his way, I mean, he's going to be dangerous. We seem to talk about him quite a bit.
Going back to a Sportsman Side-by-Side, by the way, we had been talking all season about who is going to, you know, establish themselves as a true title contender, because there was a whole bunch of lead changes in the points. I think we made it through 7 rounds before we had a repeat winner. And all of a sudden now, after a really strong ERX and a really strong Dirt City, Chad Emling finds himself with a 44-point lead. We would not have seen that coming, but it's like, especially in a class as wild as Sportsman Side-by-Side, we talk about it all the time, and we have for years, that limiting your mistakes and finding consistency any which way you can find it seems to be the difference maker, and that's what Chad Emling's done. A whole bunch of other drivers have won races, but they've also had finishes outside the top 20 for different reasons, or end up upside down or cut a tire. So Chad's been able to find the consistency, and all of a sudden he's in the driver's seat. And there's only 4 points rounds left for Sportsman, by the way.
Yeah, he's doing a phenomenal job, and you got to put yourself in that position to win that championship. And like you said, that consistency is really continuing on for him, and that's what he's looking to do at Bark River. And I think he's going to be in the running at the end of the year to catch, and it's going to be tough too, but you know, at any given time, it's fun to say that anybody can win in those classes, and that's why it's not over until it's over.
Well, we talked about William Holcher and his stranglehold in the 570 point standings. We're still on, you know, red alert for him to double down and maybe win 2 championships in one season, which is a pretty rare feat, especially on the Sportsman side. He currently has the youth side-by-side points lead, but the top 7 are within 36 points. And like I said, there's still 4 rounds left. You can pretty easily make up that many points. William, Peyton Weisbrod, Easton Helms, Jack Smith, 17 points apart, 1st to 4th. That's how tight it is. And I don't think you or I singled out that class as one that would be like knockdown, drag out points battling right down to the wire, but all of a sudden here we are.
Yeah, and that's what makes it so interesting, right? Like, you never know how it's going to shake out, and you know, you have a couple DNFs, it just tears this points championship apart. And you know, you watch guys like Billy Booth and that, how they start off very strong and then you have a couple bad days. You know, yeah. You got to put it all together, and it's not an easy feat in itself, but you know, guys are going to do it, and you got to learn from the best.
Well, another driver that still has a shot at winning 2 championships on the Sportsman side of things, Colt Wurzba. We've been keeping our eye on him. And a lot tough. Of that's because Stock Truck and Super Stock Truck are just awesome to watch anyways. Super Stock Truck, top 3, 17 points apart. Scott Belanger, Nick Bing, Colt Wurzba in 3rd. And then in Stock Truck, same story. Top 3 are 17 points apart. Dustin Rogaczewski, Colt Wurzba in 2nd. And then Tyler Hoffman in 3rd. Hoffman's been really getting stronger as the season goes on, though.
Yeah, Tyler's been right there, right? Each and every race, but just giving it a little bit more each and every time, getting more aggressive. And when he finds himself up towards the front, he does very, very well. If that truck stays together, he's got a chance to win just like anybody else at any given time. But he's really put his foot in the right direction. I think he's going to be a fast competitor through the rest of the year.
Out of William Holtscher and Colt Wurzba, who do you like better for odds to double down this year? Knowing that William's leading two classes, Colt's got a little bit of work to do in each, but he's right there in both of those. Who do you favor in that, if either of them can do it?
Right. I mean, it's not going to be easy, but I mean, William looks to be setting himself up pretty good to win them both. I mean, for Colt to win Super Stock Truck as well as Stock Truck,
it's tough.
That's going to be a little tough because Bark River, you know, Boshaw's fast, Belanger's fast. He's just got to be consistent, but it can be done, but he's got to continue to be fast and keep his truck together throughout all these rounds. And, you know, anything can bite you, but I'd have to lean on William.
All the years of us having both Stock Truck and Super Stock Truck, going back to, like, you know, Sportsman Stock and then the birth of Enduro Truck, which became Stock Truck, I don't know that we've ever had anybody even come close to winning both in one year. We've had a whole bunch of drivers that won Enduro Truck or Stock Truck and then Super Stock later, but can you think of anybody that ever raced both at the same time and was fast in both of them?
No, I can't. I was thinking the whole time you were talking about that, and I can't think of anyone back in the day that would do both and that could afford to run both at a high level. And
right,
it's cool to see Colt do it. And I mean, that family's been around a long time, but as well, he's driving these cars and driving these trucks actually just phenomenal. And
yeah,
that confidence is there. And I love how we get so emotional, right? They're putting everything into it, and it's paying off, I believe, for him.
Yeah. It's cool to have a chance to catch up with, for a little bit, with his dad, Ben Wurzba's old teammate, too, Sean Brewski. Saw him at
Dirt City. Yeah.
Chatted with him for a minute. Cool to see that some of those guys are still hanging out and keeping an interest in this.
Yeah, and it's always that same story, right? Like, I wanted to come watch, but, you know, now it's giving me that itch again. I'm like, all right, just shut your car door, go home, you'll be all right.
So we're talking about points battles that are coming into focus a little bit. There's two that are really in focus on the pro side. Cross Kirchmeyer leads pro stock side-by-side by 49. Jeb Boodle leads Amsoil pro side-by-side by 60 points. Both of those two have kind of separated themselves as the class of each of those fields. Still some really fun points battles. Even the youth. I was looking at all the youth points today. 200 side-by-sides. Gabbert Gines fairly well separated out from everybody. But you look at the 170s, the top four are 18 points apart. Short course cart, the top three are within 7 points. I'm not trying to look past Bark River, but I'm already excited for championship day on Saturday in Crandon, just to be crunching numbers. Like, I'm really getting excited for that. I'm really showing my nerdiness here.
Yeah, you're going to have everything in line. It's going to come down right till the end, and that's what's so fun, right? Like, these drivers back at home, all these kids' classes, you know, they probably sitting there counting up their points and seeing where they need to be. You know, you don't want to always think about the points in the beginning of the year, but the minute you get to that halfway point, it's like it doesn't seem to go away. You're always thinking about where you need to put yourself in position to be the best.
Do you think it's easier to be an adult with a points battle on your hands or to be like 10 years old and be battling for a championship?
I don't know. I mean, to see a kid be that competitive at that young of an age, that would be cool, right? Like, I mean, it's got to be stressful on them, but as an adult, I feel like you think of more ways and you think of all the negative stuff as well as the positive. As a kid, you really got nothing to lose, right? You're excited to be in a car, and if you do good, you do good. Yeah, it's all about fun.
Maybe that's the real lesson that us grown-ups can learn from these young competitors, kids' classes, is we're all stressing too hard about all this, man.
Yeah, you just got to let it all lay out and just have fun. You can't be too serious about it. At the same time, you got to be ready to rock and roll. But when you get too serious, sometimes it takes the fun out of it.
Well, as always, we want to remind you, dear listener, that this podcast is brought to you by Amsoil. Use the Amsoil Shop by Vehicle tool at Amsoil.com, and you can take all the guesswork out of picking the best oil and filter combination for your vehicle. Choose the right product and packaging option for you, and enjoy fast free delivery right to your door. Visit Amsoil.com to learn more. Our guest on this episode of the Champ Off-Road Podcast, presented by Amsoil, he's the current Pro Buggy Points leader, Cole Burnlore. Cole, thank you for making some time and joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
So there's a lot going on currently, 2026, for you and, like I said, standing on top of the point standings in Pro Buggy, but I want to talk about how you got to this point. Let's talk about your background first. I know that your whole life, basically from being a kid until now, it's been in motorsports one way or the other, to the point where you could say it's like in your genes to be in motorsports. Tell us about your path from where you started to how you got here.
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess I can start probably like kind of before me. My grandpa, he was kind of the trailblazer for our family in terms of off-road and whatnot. So back in the day, I don't know if it was the first or second brush run, but he attended that and was in that race. And then he also went out to Vegas and also attended the Mint 400. So he was kind of the one that kind of paved the way. And then my dad caught the bug as well. So then my dad ended up, he raced motocross and then kind of made his way after, you know, once he, my dad started a machine shop business. And then once he kind of got that up and going, he was able to get his foot in the door and start racing, in the buggy class, back in the day. So I remember, I think there's pictures of me, you know, when I was like a second or third birthday. I got a September birthday, so I spent my first birthdays going to Labor Day at Crandon. So anyways, that's kind of setting the foundation. And then I think probably around 5 or 6 I started racing motocross. You know, had a broken bone or two, kind of took some time off of that. Right around kind of teenage years, 15, 16, got really heavy into motocross. So I primarily did that and then went to college. When I went to college, it was kind of around like the time of the financial crisis and whatnot. So,
sure.
To me, really, you know, racing off road at that point in time, you know, that was just kind of a pipe dream. There was no chance I would ever think I'd be able to do that. And then, went to college, continued to do motocross. Raced some cross country snowmobile races. So I did the I-500, did like the Winnipeg to White Bear Lake or Winnipeg to whatever it's called. I can't remember, but, back it was like the first year that they did the Canada, like the full 3-day race. I did that. So that was pretty cool. And then I had my brother, he would come up to Winnipeg too, and he would kind of chase for me. So yeah, it's just been in my blood. And then all of a sudden, after college, we had some family friends that went and did the, they lived in Arizona and they did the Best in the Desert series. So we did, we were fortunate to do some of those races. So we did the Mint 400, did Vegas to Reno a few times, and actually did the Baja 1000 one time too. So that was all before, you know, we started Pro Buggy. So it's been kind of a long route to it. And then a few years after, my brother got a pro buggy and started it. And then, I kind of followed suit a little bit later on. So I started with I don't know if you guys ever remember this, but I had kind of an older kind of rusty Fodrel or whatever that got my start. So,
sure.
Started on that. And then luckily we were able to find, there was an Alumacraft that came available. So, we were lucky enough to grab that, and kind of the rest is history. So, just been kind of, you know, learning, kind of learning from my brother, really. And then all the other fast guys that have been around, you know, it's a really competitive field, and that's kind of where we're at.
Did I hear you say that your grandpa raced in one of those early brush runs?
Yeah, that's correct. I'll have to fact check on that one, but yeah, he was one of the guys up there.
Yeah. My dad raced in the very first one through like 1982 ish. So like 12, 13 years of it. So your grandpa would have raced against my dad. That's kind of cool.
Kind of crazy stuff, isn't it? Just a small world.
It's crazy, though, how far you've came off of, like, your history or your family. And, I mean, you had a nice road right in front of you if you just did your notes right? And now look at what you guys are doing in the pro buggy division. It's so much fun to watch, but you got to be very excited for the future as well.
Oh, very excited. And just, you know, I'm just very thankful because, kind of like I said, you know, I was going to ERX, you know, because we live in the Minneapolis area. And I was going to ERX in 2017 thinking to myself, man, I'd love to be out there. And I just never thought it would happen. And here we are, you know, flash forward. And it is me and my brother. And the coolest thing is, you know, and got to make our dad proud. You know, we have both of his kids, you know, both of his boy kids, I should say, you know, we're winning races. So that's a cool feat.
Do you think your background and, you know, kind of a variety of different things, talk about endurance snowmobile racing and desert racing and motocross, do you think that you were well prepared for Pro Buggy when you first got into it, or was it still like drinking from a fire hose?
I still think it was just a little bit different. You know, when I started, I was slow, man. I was scared. I did not really know what to do. So, you know, it's kind of, you know, it was an easy transition, I would say, but different, right? So it's like I knew kind of how to do the jumps from motocross and snowmobiling and stuff like that. So, I mean, the speed kind of aspect was no problem, but just to kind of put it into a car, I think that was probably the hard part. You know, I've seen my brother, you know, my brother got his start with like the road racing stuff and whatnot. So, and I always kind of told him, I'm like, you know what, I know you're good at this road racing stuff, but I really think that you're going to be better in the dirt. And then, yeah, that's what happened. But yeah, I mean, I think it does help. I'd say, I guess, especially certain tracks, I think I can kind of read the elements in the track a little bit better.
No, and that's the biggest thing, right? I mean, if you can keep and continue on learning through your career, and that's what it's all about, right? You never think that you're the best. You just want to keep on adding to your resume, and look how far you've came in a short period of time.
It's been so fun. We're racing with a bunch of the guys, you know, like Michael Meister, Billy Booth, you know, all these guys. At one point when I first started, I was like, man, I would really want to be up and kind of, you know, be up and racing with them. And now here I am, you know, dealing with them week to week. So it's good to have a little bit more confidence than when I started, because I kind of thought I was going to be back in the pack always. And then now I'm up here and, you know, one of the guys. And so that's nice. But those guys are, you know, those guys are no joke. They are good competitors and always up there.
Did you think when you first jumped into Pro Buggy, and like you said, you're already racing, you know, back then it was still, I think Steinhardt would have been there, and like Michael Hester and Eberts, I think, was racing in the Midwest at that time. You know, all these fast guys and experienced guys. Did you think that it would only take, I think it was 2 years from your rookie year to your first win? Did you expect it to come to you that quickly?
I did. Yeah. I mean, I always knew, I still kind of struggle with, you know, like the pace right away, and kind of just like, you know, I don't want to throw my race away, and I don't want to, you know, like break a ton of stuff right away. So, I think that was kind of like the hardest mentality for me to kind of change. Because, you know, you get a little bit faster, then you get a little bit faster, and you kind of take more chances. So, I always knew that I had the skill and determination. I think it just kind of took some, you know, some more time. I think it takes a little bit longer for me to kind of get comfortable in there, but I always knew I had the skill and determination, just needed some of that confidence.
Right. And they always say, don't ever watch practice if you're not in your own car, right? You can freak yourself out.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Or like walking the track. Like, we went to Glen Helen. I'm like, I don't know if I can jump all these jumps. And then, right, you know, then right. They look and like, and like everyone jumped in the first lap. So it's just one of those things.
I think there is something to like nerves go away a little bit when it's actually go time. I think there is something to that too.
Oh yeah. So I definitely struggle with nerves. And once the green flag goes, it's, you know, it's all good there.
Your muscle memory takes over, right?
Yeah, it sure does. And like, especially like, you know, same thing with like the cross country snowmobile racing. That's, you know, that's, we're going, you know, there's no cage in there, and you're going 90 miles an hour, and you can't really see, you know, sometimes you're in the snow dust. It's crazy. So, I mean, buggies are definitely scary, but definitely not the most dangerous thing I've done.
So after you proved that you could be a winner in Pro Buggy in 2024, you know, at least on paper, 2025 was, it looked like a step backwards. I suspect there's more to the story though, that maybe we don't know what was going on in 2025 that made it a little bit less successful for you.
Yeah. So I actually had a couple years ago, I had racing cross country snowmobiles, and I went over the bars and suffered a concussion. And anyways, after that, it took me a long time to kind of bounce back. I was having dizziness. I was having some vision issues. My whole kind of just like, my whole nervous system was just trying to shut down and just causing things that I had, you know, never really experienced before. And I kind of got kind of recovered and felt a little bit better. And then something happened where all those symptoms kind of came back last year. So that was really causing some issues with a lot of my racing last year. You know, I was dealing with a lot of nerves and stuff like that. So I've been doing a lot of like rehab, going to chiropractors and physical therapy to try and kind of rehab myself back to that. A lot of it was like kind of neck issues, but it took a long time to figure out exactly what was going on.
And that'll set a guy back big time, right? I mean, your physical appearance is everything, and you know, you have a backache or anything and it continues on, it takes you mentally out of your whole game.
Oh yeah, I mean, if you're, you know, going up the line and you're kind of dizzy and you're kind of disoriented, yeah, that's not a good recipe for a good season. But I spent a lot of last year. No, I think I took lean off last year because of it. It'd kind of be day to day. I really kind of honed in and you know, put all my effort into getting better, and it has definitely helped this year. We're still, you know, there's always still issues here and there, but for the most part, we're almost back to full strength here.
But is that something that's going to keep popping up long term that you kind of have to like stay out in front of?
No, I don't think so. I have no idea, but I think we're past what's going on. You know, I got a little bit more knowledge on it, and I got like the neck work down and kind of everything kind of taken care of. So we should be good from now on. But yeah, it was a long road last year.
Well, with that mostly in the rear view now, 2026, this has been your, and I'm sure you'd agree, your best year so far in Pro Buggy. You had a win down in Wheatland in round two. You've avoided the worst of the worst luck along the way. I think you were one of two drivers that's been in the top 10 every single round. Then you went out and won a second race at Dirt City. And that puts you in the points lead with five rounds left. Aside from, you know, putting the physical issues behind you, is there anything else that's been the driving force behind that success? Maybe off-season prep, just a different perspective, or what's the secret, so to speak?
Yeah, no, I'd say it just kind of being just more comfortable. Like I said, you know, I was kind of dealing with the worst of the worst, and then now we're kind of back to feeling like my normal self. And I think that really helps. And I think just, you know, kind of getting, you know, having a couple years under my belt, kind of getting the tracks down. I think that really helps. And like I said, kind of like for me, confidence is huge. You know, if I feel comfortable on the track and comfortable in the car, you know, then I'm going to do good. So like I said, I need to kind of just work on my, you know, my starts, kind of put my nose in there. You know, it's kind of double-edged sword with buggies, as you guys know. You know, it's, you want to be aggressive to get up to the front, but it can really, really hurt you, you know? So I think some of my timidness, if you will, has kind of helped me points wise because I haven't had those big mistakes.
Sure.
Right. And that's the whole key, right? I mean, and if you can see that for yourself, it makes it that much easier. And you talk about confidence, and Shane always gives us hard time when we talk about it all the time, but that's so huge, right? If you don't trust your car or your vehicle to do what it needs to do, you're just struggling mentally just to be happy with that, and takes your focus right out of the whole race itself.
Yeah, absolutely. It's, you know, it's like, I know how to speed because a lot of times, you know, practice and qualifying, I know I can lay down a fast lap and whatnot. So I think that really helps, you know, going into the race weekend. If you can lay down a good heater, then we're doing good. But like I said, there's always fast guys, right? There's pretty much, it seems like every year there's always been somebody, right? There's, you know, Meister and Billy, they're always around, but every couple of years, you know, you got Lorenzo and you got my brother. Then you got, you know, Chaden and Dave Mason. It's, you know, it seems like there's always been someone each year that's kind of stepped up, and, it makes the class really interesting.
Now that you find yourself in the points lead, after it sank in kind of after Dirt City, does that add any pressure on yourself to perform, or are you just trying to keep the same mindset that you've had this year so far?
Well, I mean, I've never been in a situation, so you got to always think that it's going to add some pressure, right? But like I said, I'm just so dang happy to like even be in this position that, yeah, it's a little bit of pressure, but I'm so damn happy to be in this position that, hey, I'm just happy to be here. And I think I'm just going to try and keep driving how I have been driving, you know, and try not to get it stuck in my head.
So like going for a championship this year, I mean, you say that's where you want to be, but I mean, do you feel like you have that bullseye on your back, or you just feel like it's just going to be like any other weekend? You got to put down the good finishes to win that championship.
No, I wouldn't say that I have the bullseye on my back, really. I'd say Jordan probably has the bullseye more usually just because he likes to mix things up. I wouldn't say so. I think we're all, you know, all pretty respectful. you know, and that's like the thing about me is, you know, I'm a never try and stick my nose in and do something that's super sketchy or take anybody out. So,
right.
I'm just going to try and win my race and just kind of, you know, always be there because kind of just been like the slow and steady, turtle at this point. So
since Jordan already has won a Pro Buggy Championship, are you kind of leaning on him? You know, he's been in this position at this point in the year before trying to just lock up a championship. Are you looking to him for guidance? Is he offering you any advice for where you stand now?
You know, I'd be a pretty bad a big brother if I had to ask him for guidance all the time, right? You know, and, it's cool that because, you know, he has been in this position. It's super nice. When we first started, you know, things were kind of, I'd say leaning on him, you know, more because he was always the more dominant one right away. You know, everyone's like talking about Jordan, who's this new kid or whatever. And I was kind of not black sheep, but I was kind of back there, you know, and just not in the spotlight as much. So, but it's nice to see him. You know, it was cool to see him get his championship and there's no bad blood between any of us.
Right.
There are certain races where we're both off. And, you know, I can just be like, you know, he won an ERX and I screwed up the first day. And so, you know, I'd slap on the back and say, hey, good job. And then, you know, I can continue to mope. But, it kind of goes back and forth, but we're both really just happy for each other. And, I do think now we're at the point where we're kind of like the Lawrence brothers in motocross. You know, we're trying to, you know, we're never going to just like take each other out. We're going to try and kind of help each other both, rise to the top. So, the one nice thing we do have is, you know, if there is, you know, we can look at some data and be like, okay, you were faster here, we were faster here. So it's nice that we can kind of compare data and then kind of figure it out that way. Yeah. That's the one cool thing about kind of having like a teammate. At the end of the day, I still always want to beat him and he always wants to beat me. So
Brent knows exactly what you're talking about because him and his brother have raced against each other dozens and probably hundreds of times. So.
Oh yeah, there's no one I'm more competitive with than my brother. So
right, and that's what makes it so hard, right? Like growing up, it's like, yeah, you want to see your brother win, but if you're racing against him, it's like, all right, it's okay if he gets second.
Yeah, well, it's like, you know, like the year that he won his championship, I think it was Sunday at, I want to say it was like the Red Bull Cup race, and he flipped the car and somehow ended up in third behind me, and I'm like, dude, I go, how you have the best luck in the world. Like, oh, he could have literally done nothing wrong. Like, you just flipped. I'm like, please just don't pass me. Let me have this, you know? But, you know, it kind of happens. Like, sometimes it's just your year. Like, this year, it's just not has been his year, you know? I've seen him. I've been behind him two times now. So, I was right behind him when he flipped in Anago. And then I was right behind him when he hit the, you know, when his throttle stuck and he hit a wall this past race. So, sometimes it's just, the year is just not your year.
So we talked about your family history in racing, but you're also, both you and Jordan are growing your own families right alongside your racing program. I thought this was kind of interesting. I think your daughter was born the same year that you started racing Pro Buggy, and then your son was actually born the same year you got your first win. So your family has, you know, grown and taken steps forward kind of at the same time that your buggy career has.
Yeah.
How impactful is it to you that you get to mix the two, like your family is so intertwined in your racing efforts?
Yeah, it is really cool. I mean, you know, both Jordan and I, we both have kids pretty much around the same age. So it's like my little boy will be turning two pretty much right at the time at Bark River. So it's very cool to kind of watch them and you know, have them be at the races and whatnot. So it's great because it's a family sport, really. It'll be nice. Like the older they get, the more they kind of understand it. And it's funny because I got my, you know, Jordan's son is telling my daughter like, hey, my dad's going to win this weekend. And then they're like, no, my dad's going to win. So like, that's pretty funny because, you know, it's like they're 4 years old and they're already competitive about whose dad's going to beat each other.
That's what makes it so much fun, right? To grow up around with the family and get to share all those great memories. And I'm sure we're going to see your kids in cars or trucks some way down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. That would be the plan. So we'll see. We just learned the bicycle without training wheels. So now we're just taking baby steps, but,
oh man.
But yeah, no, we got them on go-karts and whatnot now. So we got little toddler carts at our go-kart track, you know, starting out. So, you know, we're getting, you know, they got the itch already.
Obviously, kids will change the way you look at the entire world, that the way you look at everything, but specifically when it comes to the way you look at racing, how much do you think that's changed now that you have kids of your own?
I really wouldn't say it has changed for me too much. You know, I got the kids there and whatnot, but when it comes to the race time, you know, it's game time. So at this point in my career and life, it hasn't changed me too much. I think I'd probably be racing kind of the same.
Is there a little bit of a shift in perspective, though, where, you know, maybe a younger man without kids might prioritize things differently? I mean, I'm sure there's some of that, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, thankfully we're lucky to have, Jesse Greaves, you know, with J-Spec. He's the one prepping all the cars and whatnot. So I think the perspective there, you know, it's tough because we're kind of limited on time. You know, had we been racing kind of earlier, earlier mid 20s, I'd be able to kind of, help prep the cars more, get some more time to be able to right. kind of test before. But with, you know, with the family life and working at our business, it's very seldom that we're able to go and test. So I think, yeah, that's definitely something. So it's very beneficial that we have, someone like Jess that we can rely on, to kind of help us out, because, I mean, let's be honest, I don't, just with how busy we are with, you know, family and work, there's no chance that we'd be able to kind of keep up our cars, to kind of be at this position that we're at without him.
So when you're talking, Jesse, prepping your cars, are both cars pretty much the same and you guys just have a little bit different setups, or are you guys identical?
No, there's some slight differences. I mean, they're both Alumacrafts, but I think Jordan's car is just a little bit different. So I think we just have like a little bit different shock setup and whatnot, but for the most part, we're pretty much running the same thing. So
how much input do you have? I mean, obviously you're the one that's reporting what the car is doing to Jesse, but, you know, what does that conversation look like back and forth while he has the cars and he's prepping them and you're in Minnesota thinking about things?
Yeah. Funny. It kind of goes back to us not having too much time to test and whatnot. So, a lot of times it's like, so how was the car? I'm like, good. It was a driver that was a piece of crap, you know? So, I think like, so Jordan and I both getting our start in having the family business at the go-kart track. We really learned how to kind of adapt to the carts because every cart would be a little bit different. So I think we've gotten kind of less picky with how we like have the car set up and more of like, hey, we're going to adapt to how it's doing, which I think kind of helps when it comes to, let's just say this, the end of the race, like the track dries out or whatever. I think we can adapt probably a little bit better than some of the other people that didn't have all that experience growing up with, like, you know, just different stuff. So, and I'd say Jordan's probably one of the best at, he can literally drive a car that is so bad and do so well.
But that's what makes you a driver, right? I mean, all your bad cars growing up and the ones that didn't work so well, when you get in something that works good, it's like, oh man, this is going to be fun.
Ask Brent about his first stock truck.
Oh, unbelievable. You don't want to hear it. Yeah, you didn't know what parts were going to stay on.
Oh yeah, no, I can believe that. Yeah, like I said, with that Fodrel, the first year I raced it, someone, I think it was at like Crandon, the last race, and one of the guys, this was before we had Jess or anybody, one of our family friends, he's like the seat bolts almost fell off, and I had no clue. I'm like, oh, thank God, I just survived that race.
Well, Cole, looking ahead to Bark River, the season's winding down. There's not a whole lot of sand left in the hourglass. Going back to last year, I think it was round 12 last year, you finished second, but like I said, already in your career, you've won at ERX, you've won at Wheatland. And those, I think, are the two tracks that are kind of the most similar to Bark River. Where does that have your confidence level for Bark River this year?
I really love Bark River. Last year, leading most of the race, and I know Jordan was right behind me. He was fighting for points. So not that I gave it up completely or whatever, but, definitely made it a little bit easier on him to pass me. But, I still think I can do really well. And I think a lot of the kind of like the bigger, flowier tracks suit my driving style. I'm going into Bark River feeling pretty good and pretty confident.
Yeah. Bark River is that fast, wide open track, and it's fun to watch Pro Buggy on that big layout. And, you know, you can get yourself into trouble pretty easy, just as well as it could be a nice day. It can turn into a bad day really quick there.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's always, you know, whether it be dust and, you know, rain seems to kind of happen every year. You know, I think we had last year, it was like, super kind of, you know, like my, I, my helmet fogged up in one of the races, because I think we had a 2-day race last year.
Oh yeah, yep.
But yeah, no, it's I'm always looking forward to Bark River. So that, and you know, Crandon, you should do pretty well there too. I think I've had I've had a ton of second places there, so I'm really looking to kind of finally get my first win at Crandon. I can't let Jordan have all these dang wins and not me. So
I've kind of a broader question for you. Do you believe in, you know, quote unquote racing for points, or is that kind of fool's gold and you just have to go out and run your race like you normally would?
I would say it kind of depends. You know, it's, does the championship really get you much in terms of sponsorship dollars or anything like that? No, it's not. But at the end of the day, to say that you're a champion, that's probably one of the coolest things. You know, that's something that no matter how much, if you have no money, that's still something you can kind of hang your hat on at the end of the day. Still kind of race for points, you know, I still kind of race, every race is for its own. But you know, when I'm at this position now, like I've never have been, you know, it is kind of in the back of your mind. You're like, all right, well, I gotta limit some of the risks to kind of keep those right points. So.
So what's a good weekend look like for you? What are you planning to do? I mean, obviously winning both days would be what you want to do, but what's a good weekend for you?
Yeah. I mean, realistically, if I can get on the podium, you know, I'd be happy. Just, you know, not a DNF or anything like that would be huge. So,
right.
If I can kind of just keep up there, you know, podium would be great. If, you know, if it's a top five, whatever, cause I know, like I said, there's a lot of guys, you know, Meister, he was on fire. He's had some bad luck. You know, you just know that he's going to be coming back firing pretty soon here. So, same with Jordan, you know, like Jordan, Billy, you know, all these guys are all really fast. So, and then, of course, Tony, right? Tony, yeah, was pretty fast there as well. So anyways, I just say getting on the box and just being consistent.
Cole, one thing I've heard from you several times so far is a lot of gratitude. I think you're thankful for probably more than just the people you've mentioned so far, right?
I guess I'd like to say I really appreciate you guys inviting me on this. Just want to say some thanks to my family, you know, my wife, my kids, my dad. You know, if it wasn't for my dad, you know, none of this would be possible. So, then I think Quality Contour, Pro Kart Indoors, J-Spec, Jesse Greaves, Shark Club, Hankook Tires, and Method Wheels.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming on the show, man, and best of luck to you in Bark River here in not too long.
Good luck, Cole, to you and Jordan, and I hope to see you on top of the box, buddy.
Yeah, thank you, and I appreciate you guys do a fantastic job, so thank you very much.
And with that, Brent, before we dim the lights on this episode of the podcast, one class we didn't talk about because I wanted to get our conversation with Cole in first is Pro Buggy. Another really good points battle, like we talked about with Cole. He's got a 20-point lead. Tony Keepers, who I will reiterate, I picked to be a contender before the season started, and who, by the way, made good on his promise that he would win a race this year at Dirt City. Got it done in round 9.
Yes, he did.
He's 20 back of the lead. And then tied for third, Michael Meister and Jaden Uribe, 28 points back of first. Again, 5 rounds left for the pros. Going back to last year, Cole and Michael Meister each had a runner-up finish at Bark River, and the two drivers that won races last year not racing this year. So still pretty wide open. Knowing what we know now, and after talking to Cole and understanding his confidence level, how do you see this Pro Buggy points battle playing out through these final 5 rounds?
Man, you got to win races if you're in the Pro Buggy division. You want those points to come to you. I mean, you have to go out and win at Bark River. Yeah, you have to get a W. I mean, Michael Meister, he's going to be fast, but it's anybody's game. I mean, you know the talent that's in this class, that Bark River could shake it all up again.
I think what we've learned, it was a fun exercise for me today because I was going back and looking at the Pro Buggy points going back to like 2021, almost 5 years of points championship results. It's always been good in like the entire history of Champ Off Road. It's been good in Pro Buggy every single year. This class rules, man.
Yeah, it really does. And it's so cool to see how far it came. When we were kids, it was fun to watch all the cars, and then it kind of plateaued out where we didn't have many, but now we have a healthy field, great talent, and they do really rip. It's fun to watch. It's one of my favorite races on the weekend.
And there's still the interest for more drivers to keep moving into the class as well, which is awesome. We're seeing, you know, a couple rookies in the field this year. It's going to keep growing. That's the best part. Like, I'm stoked on Pro Buggy, man, for real.
Oh yeah, it's awesome. I love it to death. It brings me back to the good old days, and to watch these guys duke it out week in and week out, it's so much fun. and they're talented. And that's all I can say. You got to see who's going to win at the end of the day, because I can't pick right now.
Well, that'll do it for this episode. We will have one more episode out before we go to Bark River for the 50th Island Resort and Casino Off-Road Rumble in the UP. We'll have a lot to talk about leading up to that weekend, the Richard Ault Legacy Long Jump Contest making its return, 3 days of racing, a big celebration. For my money, Youpers celebrate better than anywhere or anybody, so I'm really looking forward to it. We'll break all that down for you on the next one, but that's it for this one. He's Brent. I'm Shane. This has been the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil, and we will talk to you again very soon.
Thanks for listening to the Champ Off-Road Podcast presented by Amsoil.